GrowCFO is where finance leaders grow together. Join thousands of like-minded professionals using GrowCFO to access the combined knowledge and experience of the finance leader community. You can join us today at growcfo.net. Hello and welcome to the GrowCFO show. I'm your host, Kevin Appleby, and today I've got with me a guest who is going to be a speaker at the Global Finance Summit that we're putting on in GrowCFO between the 15th and 16th of May. Welcome to the GrowCFO show, Randy Wootton from Maxio.
Oh, thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to the summit in a couple of weeks.
Randy, tell us a little bit about you. What's your background?
Wow. Well, that's a great question, Kevin. It's had three chapters. My first chapter, I was in the military. I was out a naval aviator flying over Iraq a long, long time ago and spent about 12 years in the Navy, which is great. Made the transition to the corporate sector through business school and then spent the next 12 years working my way up the ladder, multiple companies in technology, Microsoft, Salesforce. But it's always been B2B SaaS, and I've been primarily focused on go-to-market. My third stage of my career is what I call the C-suite. So I've been CEO three times. First time was actually a battlefield promotion at a public company called Rocket Fuel, which is a first generation AI company, which we'll talk a little bit about. The second one was a private company called Percolate, backed by Sequoia, GGV, Lightspeed, First Round Capital, which I sold to Seismic, and then I stayed on as chief strategy officer. And now I'm in my third stint. I figure maybe now I'll get it right. I'm at Maxio, which is the mashup of two companies. One was SaaS Optics, the other one was Chargeify. And what we offer is billing, invoicing, reporting that allows you revenue management and revenue recognition to provide all the SaaS metrics you need to run your business. And in between, I've been on a couple of boards. And so this is a really neat time in my career where I feel like all the experiences I've had are now informing the types of conversations I'm able to have, the problems I'm wrestling with, the teams I get to lead. So it's just been great.
Yeah. So Randy, three startups, three CEO roles.
Yeah.
Wasn't one enough for you?
Yeah. I wish it had been, Kevin. That was a really interesting opportunity. As I mentioned, it was sort of a battlefield promotion. Rocket Fuel was in a turnaround situation. They were launching a new business. And I started 30 days later, they let the CEO go, which is distressing to me because I had joined to work for that guy. He was a great guy. And then the board went out and looked for about 6 months. And I think anybody in their right mind decided they didn't want that role. So they finally came back to me and said, Randy, what do you think? And I said, no, initially. I said, no. But the chairman of the board was a great guy, Matti Zwieben. And he said, Randy, there are very few public company CEOs. If you ever want to do it, this is the time to take this job. It's not going to be easy. We'll do it together. And so we worked together for 2 years and actually took the company, sold it to a private equity firm. And I honestly, Kevin, at the end of that, I felt I had learned a lot, but I still had a major imposter syndrome. Like I wasn't doing things right. And it was so hard. And I was like, I need to do another one. And so that's what led to the second one. And that was another one of these turnarounds. And I sold it within 2 years. And I don't know. I think when you're hiring a professional CEO, the investors and or PE firms, VC or PE firms know something is wrong. They need to bring someone in. And then it depends on how long it takes to articulate the new strategy, figure out the right executive team to be part of that, and then what's the execution plan you're going to put in place. And so it feels like the first two, I earned my spurs and I learned a bunch. And now in the third one, I got a good perspective and things are tracking in a good direction. And so maybe this will be the last one. But after this, I do still hope to be able to continue on as an operating partner at a PE firm or as a independent observer or other boards. I do really like working with teams on big, hard problems and primarily go to market and figuring out how to create category winning companies.
Yeah. And I love having this sort of conversation, kind of what motivates people to carry on, because now you've got to the stage that you're on the third one. So stepped out of the second one, you could perhaps retire at that point because probably money wouldn't be too much of an issue.
Yeah.
So, but you go on for other reasons than wanting to necessarily earn more.
I think so. I think, Kevin, in my alter ego or the what's the other life, I've talked about maybe going back. I have two masters. I have a master's in the great books and a master's in MBA. And I thought at some point I'm going to go back and get a PhD and teach. And so maybe after this one, I'll take the time off and do that. My wife will tell you that she won't let me stay in the house if I don't do something. And I'm not a golfer, but I get so much energy out of the challenges. And what I love about business is it's always unfolding. Like, we're going to talk a little bit at your summit and in our session in particular about the major transformation that AI is introducing. Now everyone's wrestling with a whole new set of problems. And so I just find the intellectual stimulation of business to be fascinating. Now, it would be fun not to be the guy that has to sit in the corner office and make the decisions and be held accountable for the final results, take the stress level down a little bit. That's why I like that operating partner role or advisor role for maybe the next chapter. But I didn't see myself doing anything else. And I don't have a helicopter or a yacht. So it's still working for the man and bringing home a little money for the mom.
Yeah. So, Randy, we're talking about AI.
Yeah.
We think of something recent. No, it's ChatGPT. Let's put this into everybody's vocabulary in the last 18 months. In the session we're going to do together at the summit, we're going to get our crystal balls out and have a look at where we think this is going next. But you mentioned the first of those CEO roles was in an AI company.
Yeah, it was.
But there's nothing new about this AI thing.
Well, I think in AI machine learning, the broader construct has been around for a very long time. I think the practical applications of it have gone through a couple of generations. The company that I was a CEO of, and I didn't do all the hard work to build the models or build out all the data centers, but at Rocket Fuel, by the time I joined them, we had spent something like $250 million in terms of engineering and data centers. We had 20 plus data centers around the world, with the most expensive servers because we needed the speed of the compute time. AWS wasn't built out at that time. I had 30 data scientists on staff, another 40 what we would call a client analysts who were smart data people who could take the outputs of our models and apply them to specific campaigns for our advertisers. So we were doing programmatic advertising, and we had something like 20 models that were being refreshed every 24 hours. So we were using predictive logistic regression analysis, doing predictive marketing, but it was all internal and it required this enormous investment. But what it did, Kevin, was it changed the very way that media planners and buyers did their jobs. So it reinvented how people do buying and planning. It used to be you would negotiate with a publisher as an advertiser or as a person at an agency, a media planner at an agency. You'd use paper, you'd fax it back and forth, and then you would buy a unit on MSN, a homepage ad. Now it's become like the stock market, where you have AI working to optimize who's showing up at that moment in time. And we can make a decision in less than a tenth of a millisecond in terms of which advertiser should bid and at what price they should bid to maximize the value they got. And we had the results were extraordinary, about three times better than what you would get from having a human do it. And so this was back in 2012, 2015, but it required this immense investment in infrastructure, immense investment in data scientists, and we were paying a crazy amount of dollars for a data scientist. And then you also had to have a services group to support it. The revolution with the generative AI that we've seen over the last 18 months is now everyone's a prompt engineer. And so you've removed all of that cost of entry to be able to unlock the power of AI. And it's transforming everything that everybody's doing in the large language model. And the predictive analytics are still working the way they do and on large data sets. And you probably need some data scientists to help you with that. But just from the very mundane, which we talked a little bit about in terms of writing articles, to the very insightful in terms of running your business. AI is at play in a very different way in the second generation.
Yeah. How's AI affected you personally?
Well, it's interesting, Kevin, because I'm telling my team and everybody that works in our company that they need to play with it. They need to get smart because the world is transformed. I was listening to someone on the A16Z podcast, the Andreessen Horowitz podcast. We were talking about how this revolution is as transformative as the microprocessor was for computers. This is going to transform the way we think about computers and computing and interacting with computers. And I tell everyone, look, there are a bunch of tools out there. Just go play with them. So I'll give you one just very banal example. I write articles. I've been writing articles. I don't write a lot of them, but I write them periodically. And they're hard. Come up with a new idea and work through it on your own. I've used ghostwriters in the past. And with a ghostwriter, I would give the person an idea that I had. I'd ask them to go out and do the research for me. And that would include surveying a bunch of different resources, citing sources, because I always want my articles to be data-based and to be from reputable sources. And then would come up with the draft. And then he and I would work through a couple of cycles of the draft. And then I would do my final version. And then he would act like a copy editor for me. And what I found now is with ChatGPT, I don't need a ghostwriter. I go to ChatGPT and I start up my, hey, here in my tone and voice, I'd like to explore this topic. Find me three resources. Argue the pro and con of the argument. And the ChatGPT gets it back to me that same minute. So I'm not waiting at all. And I'm working through the article in almost a conversation with the bot. Interestingly enough, I don't know if you know this, but I was listening to someone, and I'm sure someone at your sessions during your summit will talk about this, but ChatGPT responds to etiquette. If you say please and say thank you, you get better responses. So I'm literally having a conversation and say, could you please adjust this? And thank you so much for that. And it would be great if you could do this. And it's a little surreal, but.
Why shouldn't it, Randy? Because if it's been trained on the whole of the internet, there'll be stuff on the internet that talks about etiquette, talks about how to have conversations. Therefore, why wouldn't ChatGPT have that way of thinking?
I hear you. I think at some level for me, it's okay. Well, then you feel like it's sentient. And so there's this leap from it being a tool that's doing advanced search for you or are building arguments that feels very mechanical versus if you're using language, please and thank you. And, oh gosh, I really need this. I'm laughing. Is someone looking over my shoulder and watching what I'm typing? Because this seems a little odd that I'm speaking this way to a machine. But I think to your point, Kevin, maybe it does take into account in its answers sentiment, tone, urgency. No kidding, I have a board presentation. I need to get this document done. And it comes in with a better answer. I think we're all exploring it. But at the high level, what I would say is that ghostwriter that I was working with, $1,000 to $1,500 in engagement. ChatGPT, $20 a month. Yeah. Radically changes that dynamics and that value exchange. Now, what does that ghostwriter need to do? Well, that ghostwriter needs to think about frustrated English majors, like I was an English major, right? Like frustrated English major. Well, what do I do in a world that is augmented by AI? Do I come to someone like me, Randy, and say, hey, Randy, I've been out, I've read all your stuff, I've ingested it to ChatGPT, I've come up with four new ideas. Are you interested in the idea? So it's not the drafting, but it's the ideation. It's moving up Maslow's hierarchy of need in terms of value add. I think people like those ghostwriters are going to need to rethink what they're doing to be able to get me to pay $1,500. And that value exchange is very different versus copy editing. So I use Grammarly for copy editing. It's unbelievable what it does. It's gotten me to put the period with the question, the quotation marks
after. As well.
Unbelievable. Change the world. So I think every function, and we'll talk a little bit about this at our session in a couple of weeks, but accounting, I think, is one of those professions that is poised for transformation based on the fact that it does a lot of detailed work that a machine can probably do better, more accurately, and certainly faster. And what's interesting is I talked to a lot of CFOs on my podcast and in my business, we sell to CFOs. CFO profession, the finance profession, is not one known to take risks. So it's counterintuitive to tell your finance team to go play with AI because they want to see the model. They want to see all the assumptions. They want to see the rows. They want to be able to double check it. And now you're saying, no, use the black box, which it's been known to hallucinate. You know, hallucinating when they're finding a reference for me when I'm writing an article versus hallucinating when we're trying to figure out what our cash position is are two very different things. So I do think the challenge for accounting and the opportunity is going to be transformational.
Yeah, I think it certainly is. I know something that we're going to get into when we talk about this in the summit is looking at what that then does to the cost base.
Yeah.
What it does to headcount, because in the example there that your ghostwriter is out of a job, how many people in the finance function are potentially out of a job? And I think the jury is out at the moment between, is this a headcount reduction or is this a headcount freeing up to do more value-added stuff?
Well, one of the things, Kevin, in talking to folks like Tom Hood at the AICPA, and then I was talking to Ron Brown, another Brit who runs the accounting roundtables, the number one issue that accountancies are facing right now is a labor shortage. people aren't going into the profession. So, for example, how do you solve that? One is, I think a lot of people are embracing borderless talent, the concept of borderless talent, and you're looking in other countries for people that are English speaking and understand GAP, and you're using them as accountants. We're doing that. We have people in the Philippines that are in accounting roles, which is great. Number two, though, is I think that may be the force, that reality, that trend of people not going into accounting, a bunch of accountants retiring. Like when faced with this technology transformation, okay, I think a lot of folks are just going to say, I'm too old. I don't want to give up my Excel. You can pry my Excel model from my cold, dead hands, right? Like those people are retiring. And so you're losing people at the top with all the wisdom. You're losing people from the bottom with all the grunt work. The partner model of the accountancies is going to be revolutionized. I do think that is the type of trends and pressure that I think may force the profession to really think about how do they staff? What are the roles that they do? What are the roles that they rely on folks outside of the country? And then what are they depending on AI to augment?
Certainly an area that within Grow CFO, as we talk to people, we're seeing is a shortage area is the whole FP&A.
Yeah.
Budgeting, forecasting, doing stuff with the data. Now,
yeah,
those sort of roles are split into two big chunks. Number one is actually crunching the data, getting into a space that you can make some sense.
Yeah.
Number two is interpreting and telling the stories. Now, I think you'll always need the human to tell the stories, but can the AI, the automation, crunch the data? Can the AI give you the first inferences of what the data's telling you to crunch?
100%. And that idea of controller, right? Accountant controller versus the FP&A. And what I found is those people come from very different backgrounds. Often the FP&A person comes from in the private sector is a VC. They may be an analyst that was at the VC and they come across and they're your FP&A guy or they're a strategy consultant or something like that. It's actually one of the things that Maxio helps with is we're the system of record for billing and invoicing. So we have 2,300 companies with about $18 billion of billing and invoicing data rolling across the platform. And it's the system of truth. It connects your CRM and general ledger, and it tells you what's going on. And as you probably know better than anyone, I've heard that the number one deal killer is accounting errors. And the accounting errors for B2B SaaS companies, subscription businesses, subscription services comes down to revenue recognition. And so that's something that can be solved with technology. And then what you have is this opportunity to take that historical data and apply it to look forward. And what you're outlining is that the insights for how the business is going to go and what are the scenarios that you would want to model. Currently, that's all done with Excel. With AI, you can introduce things like benchmarks. You can introduce optimization. So if you want to increase your margin on your gross on COGS, here's the three different scenarios that it can put forward for you. So I think there's a lot of, as you mentioned, first level inference in terms of things to think about and scenarios as you're doing your financial modeling. And financial modeling, I think, especially in this environment, is moving from a once a year thing to almost a quarterly or monthly thing. And as a business, what are the new signals we're getting with all the uncertainty that's in the broader market? What do we think next month's going to be? And how does that roll on for the next quarter or the next year? The immediacy of the input, right? The closed loop input and the expectation to have insight for what you're going to do. I think the bar has raised tremendously.
I think it has. Randy, just looping back to Maxio, tell me a little bit more about Maxio and what you do, but how I see the next step of AI as being all of companies that are in that fintech space
will
have some sort of AI built into the office. Tell me a little bit about what you do now and how that might change going forward.
I'll back up just a bit because I've spent 20 years in the other CEO roles, but all my early career in the civilian sector was in go-to-market. So technology that we were selling to marketers, advertisers, agencies, and then I spent time at Seismic and that was sales tech. So MarTech, ad tech, sales tech, service tech, and all of those industries have been transformed by technology. AI, as I mentioned, was on the periphery, but it was a huge investment. It was making inroads. And when I wanted to do my next gig, I was skiing and riding bikes, and a recruiter called about this opportunity with Battery, who was a top tier firm. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's interesting. And I thought, yeah, the office of the CFO is one of the last functions that hasn't been totally transformed by technology yet. And so in terms of workflow automation and driving efficiency and effectiveness. And so I do think, to your point, FinTech, Office of CFO, is now becoming an area that everyone's investing in. And other than AI just writ large, is an area that a lot of people have theses about. And then parallel track, the advent of AI, now it's really going to blow it up. So I'm super excited about the opportunity. Where we sit, where Maxio sits, is in between the CRM and the general ledger. So think of contract or order to cash. And often there's a fragmented order to cash because of data silos, because technology is not talking. And what you put in Salesforce or HubSpot isn't the order that actually gets captured in your financial system at the transaction level. There's some disconnect around it. That's what leads to those accounting errors. And so what Maxio does at its core is it does invoicing. I think of invoicing for sales-led motions where you have a negotiated contract going back and forth. It also does billing. So billing would be more like credit card transactions, smaller companies, PLG, product-led growth. We provide the capabilities to do all of that. You can bill the way you want, basically. That you send out the invoices, you help inform the collections. It's that data, that AR collections, billing, invoicing data, that we are able to aggregate to provide the insights around things such as gross retention, net retention, LTV to CAC, magic numbers. So the value of the product is not just for the revenue management, it's the operating metrics that you use to run your business. And as finance, at least in the US, is primarily tied to GAAP. And so you argue about where do you put your customer success? Do you put it above the line or below the line, customer gross margin? But other than that, everything else is very clear about how you account for it. Everyone gets audited. The world of SaaS is the Wild West. People have very different definitions around ARR and what that means, and when do you include gross margin when you're doing things like magic number. So what we're trying to help is standardize how people think about running SaaS or subscription businesses, and that's the power you get from the platform.
Yeah. So going forward, I guess you're seeing AI as a big tool, looking at all that data that you gather from your billing system.
Well, I think that's what we're going to talk about on the 16th, Kevin, right? So we don't want to give that away right now. But
of course we don't. No.
I think there are, we have at least 7 use cases that we'll talk through together. And I think what we'll do is we have another great person joining us is, I don't know, maybe we'll do a little bit of hype or reality on the use case and talk about, well, what does it really mean to do that? Do we know technologies that are actually enabling that right now? Or is this a use case for today? Is it for tomorrow? Or is it for Neverland? In terms of what do we think is real? And I think it'll be a nice compliment to the rest of the sessions that you have. They look really interesting and the people you have just seem fascinating. So I do hope people will be able to stay throughout the day and a half of the 15th and the 16th. And if they only show up for our session, well, we hope to make it worth
it. Our session is going to be best of all, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Randy, thank you hugely for that journey through your background, Maxio's background, some thoughts about AI. We've covered a huge amount there. Randy Wootton, thank you for being this week's guest on the Grow CFO Show.
Oh, it was my absolute pleasure, Kevin. I look forward to our conversation in a couple of weeks.